In the last 7 years, more than 2 million people are estimated to have fled El Salvador, Guatemala, and Honduras, risking their lives as they journey through Mexico and head for the United States southern border. Last week, the U.S. reinstated the Trump-era Remain in Mexico policy, which forces asylum seekers to wait outside of the U.S. while their asylum claims are processed, a move human rights defenders have said will impact their safety and their due process rights. But what is causing people to take on this dangerous journey in the first place? And what's being done to address the root causes of this migration? Joining us to discuss this are Laura Carlson, director of the Americas Program. She joins us from Mexico City. And Marco Castillo, co-executive director of the International Human Rights Organization Global Exchange. He joins us from New York. Thank you both for joining me. Marco, I'm going to start with you. You work with migrants in Mexico. You're from Mexico. Can you talk to us a little bit about the journey that migrants go through to get to the U.S.-Mexico border?
Sure. So what we're seeing right now, it's migrant families that flee from their countries, flee from the harsh conditions, and embark in a life-threatening journey where immigration policies force them to take high-risk routes controlled by organized crime or corrupt police and immigration officers that many times threaten or commit kidnapping, illegal deportations, and sadly, many times the journey ends in death.
Laura, Marco is describing a very dangerous and troublesome journey that people are taking on. What are some other factors that we should be thinking about?
Well, there have been a lot of changes. We have to keep in mind that migration is normal. It's a part of life. It's a part of human history. But what we've seen are a lot of changes. We've seen, of course, an increase. We've seen the increase in apprehensions at the U.S. border. We've seen an increase in Central Americans coming through Mexico. And we've seen these very notable changes, which is the change from being young men basically looking for work or escaping violence to entire families. What this shows us is the collapse of Central American countries that has a lot to do with the history of U.S. policy and other forms of intervention in their own countries that have created a political, economic, and social collapse in which people are being displaced from their homes, they're being forced out by violence and death threats. Literally, they've watched other family members be killed. They're told that they have to get out of their own homes in 24 hours. This is how dire the situation is that would actually cause people to take on such a perilous journey. They're arriving in Mexico in terrible shape. So it's a population that's been abandoned by public policy in all of the countries and that has had to face conditions that no human family should have to face.
Marco, we now see the reimplementation of the Remain in Mexico policy. How will that affect the conditions that you and Laura have been describing?
Of course, since the implementation of the MPP, informally known as Remain in Mexico, migrants have been forced to wait in Mexico for their U.S. pending asylum cases. And while they wait, they face terrible conditions at the Mexican side of the border. And just to give you a number, from approximately 68,000 participants of the original MPP, just 723 were granted asylum or some kind of immigration relief. So what I'm saying here is that this is a policy that more than anything tries to deter the poor and just giving opportunities for very few individuals to be their cases heard and accepted in the U.S. And so we're talking about thousands of people who remain in Mexico, thousands of people being deported, and all this process is life-threatening and obviously full of human rights violations.
Laura, the ACLU said that the resumption of the Remain in Mexico policy would lead to, quote, horrific abuse, including torture, rape, and death. Are the stakes really that high?
We've already seen it. Marco has interviewed people on the border during when it was implemented during the Trump administration. I've been up there and talked to people in Tijuana, in Matamoros, in Ciudad Juarez. We know this happens. There's over 600 documented cases of people who came back who were assaulted or raped. in Mexico. There are people who have gone back to their home countries and been assassinated because that's why they left in the first place. They knew they were going to be assassinated. And nobody seems to want to take responsibility for what happens to those people. Mexico never had to accept that program. It's a violation of sovereignty because they're sending people who have legal processes in the United States back to Mexico, which Mexico has no responsibility whatsoever to accept these people. You know, they're shuttling them all over the country with no real plan of what they can do to have a livelihood, to survive, to have a future, because these policies are completely shutting them out.
Marco, the majority of asylum seekers crossing the U.S. southern border are coming from Honduras, El Salvador, Guatemala. You were just in Honduras, in fact. What's your take on why people risk their lives to make this incredibly dangerous journey to the U.S. from places like Honduras?
Nobody migrates because they want to, because, you know, for pleasure. I mean, Central American countries like Guatemala, El Salvador, Honduras are plagued with U.S. guns, with organized crime, with corruption. And not only that, but Guatemala and El Salvador are, for example, among the 15 countries in the world most exposed to disasters. In November 2020, in Guatemala, Honduras, and Nicaragua were amongst the countries to be most severely impacted by hurricanes Eta and Iota. In Guatemala alone, 40% of subsistence agriculture was affected, and 80% of basic staples like maize or beans were devastated. So these are countries that are under the terrible food insecurity already high from years before. So migrants are fleeing, you know, and like almost circumstances that are impossible to bear, like people cannot survive in their own countries. And that's why people embark in this, you know, almost impossible journey.
Laura, earlier this year, the Biden administration proposed a strategy to address the root causes of migration from Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. That included $4 billion in aid. U.S. aid to these countries. Is this any different from the programs we've heard in the past, seen in the past?
That's exactly the central point that follows up on what Marco was saying, because unfortunately it's not. And nobody like Joe Biden should know better than the fact that those kinds of proposals have failed in the past, because he was in charge of this, really, in charge of Central American development and stabilization during the Obama administration. And what he did was impose the war on drugs model of putting the armed forces in the streets for public security tasks, impose a kind of an economic model based on foreign investment and the construction of these big mega projects that actually displace indigenous, especially indigenous and rural communities. And these end up being the people who migrate. And so to have a new four-year, $4 billion program that repeats those same errors is somewhat inconceivable.
Marco, how does security factor into dealing with the root causes of migration? The U.S. has spent $3.3 billion since 2007 assisting security forces with fighting criminal organizations and drug cartels in Mexico under what's known as the Mérida Initiative. But since that time, 150,000 people have been killed due to organized criminal violence. It's a big number, more when you factor in disappearances and deaths of migrants. Where's the money actually going?
Well, these programs like the Mérida Initiative and other similar programs that the U.S. has signed with Mexico and Central America have proven to fail because militarizing a country where there is no justice or access to justice or the rule of law, it's just creating much more inadequate conditions for the growth of violence. And so what we need to see, it's an agreement that not only includes economic investment, but a true commitment from the U.S. to control the flow of U.S. guns. We need the U.S. more invested in respecting the people's will when it comes to democratic elections and when it comes to, you know, freedoms and rights for self-determination. So there's no investment in the economy or in security security that it's going to be fruitful as long as the U.S. is not supporting and respecting what communities, what families and communities of origin are deciding for their own future, and as long as U.S. guns continue to flow and traffic it into their countries.
Marco, we've seen restrictive U.S. border policies for decades, but President Andrés Manuel López Obrador, also known as AMLO, promised he would not be doing what he called the U.S.'s dirty work when it comes to addressing migration. AMLO ran on a progressive platform, specifically saying he would transform Mexico by rooting out corruption, welcoming migrants, and moving away from a neoliberal economic model. Did you expect that this pivot would look the way it did, that he'd respond to migration the way that he has?
Well, no, not at all. I mean, in the beginning, it was sold to the Mexican population that Mexico had to accept the MPP protocols because of we were under threat of economic sanctions. But after that, the Mexican government has used this anti-constitutional and illegal program and to use migrants as a bargaining chips to advance better economic agreements. And so these kind of negotiations represent not only, well, it's the expansion of the Trump era narrative and strengthening of the Trump anti-immigrant narrative to Mexico and Central America, putting hundreds of thousands of lives at risk. That is not progressive at all.
Laura, in your estimation, what could alleviate some of the hardships that migrants are facing?
In terms of the politics of it, the policy specifically, the MPP, the Migration Protection Protocols, ironically named by Trump, must be eliminated. It's illogical and it's cruel. The Title 42 in the United States, which is blocking migrants from even going into request asylum on a health basis, that has been disproven by health officials, must be eliminated as well. There must be humane asylum processes in both countries that are efficient, that don't create these gigantic backlogs, leaving people with no options for survival and often forcing them to return to countries that are dangerous. There must be educational programs in both countries that begin to tell people migrants are good for the economy. Migration is not a threat. We are not talking about criminals. We are talking about families. So all these problems are very core problems, but they're not unfixable. They're actually relatively easy with a reorientation of public policy.
Laura, Marco, thank you so much for joining me up front, and thank you for the conversation.
Thank you.
All right. That is our show. Up front, we'll be back next week.